Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, if you are a huge fan of college sports, you will know that most of the players who are African-American are attending predominantly white institutions and providing millions of dollars to those institutions for their athletic prowess. And mostly that falls with football and basketball. But we have some talented student athletes also attending historically black colleges and universities. But do we have enough of them at HBCUs? And having that sort of minimal amount of the top tier athletes, what does that mean for historically black colleges and universities? Tonight, that is the center of our discussion. How do you encourage more of those top athletes to come to HBCUs? The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you. Are you an alum of an HBCU, current athlete at HBCU, parent of a student there, or a parent who has made a different decision to go to a predominantly white institution? Why did you make that decision? We'd want to hear from you. In studio with us to help move this conversation along is Carrie Davis. He is the director of athletics here at Howard University. And Kelsey Nicole Nelson, she is a reporter with Fox Sports. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carrie Davis, you are the athletic director at Howard University, but just, you know, for all information that is out there, you're a graduate of Dartmouth.
Yes.
That's a great thing.
Dartmouth undergrad, yes.
Yeah, so you can, and graduate school?
Cornell.
Okay, all Ivy League.
Yeah.
But Howard has its own, obviously, you know, Ivy League status and however you want to break that down. So you can look at this in a couple of ways. What is happening? Why aren't the top-tier athletes attending HBCUs?
I think the answer to that is pretty simple, and it's a question of exposure. Young people, they watch television. They, you know, there's probably no bigger television event than March Madness, and when you look at March Madness and you see the same teams, Duke, Kentucky, you know, Kansas, et cetera, right? Those then are the schools that the young people who are excelling at basketball or excelling at football when they watch the football playoffs, those are the schools that that the young men want to gravitate to. So I think that's the primary reason.
Now, Kelsey, not that this conversation hasn't been sort of percolating before, but what really has sort of brought this to the larger attention is Jemele Hill and her article in The Atlantic. She's a former reporter at ESPN, got in some hot water, called President Trump a racist, and then things, she decided to go a different way. But she's taken a position to say, hey, listen, more of these top-tier athletes need to go to HBCUs because they're not being paid, yet they're making millions of dollars for these institutions that they go that are predominantly white institutions. That money can be transferred to HBCUs. Is that a lot to ask of these top-tier athletes who are looking to make their own money professionally?
That's a great question, and it's one that's complicated. As Carrie Davis said, the exposure factor is why we don't see a lot of them going to these HBCUs, and it's unfortunate. But I think what Jemele was trying to say in her piece was that if you do begin to go there, the exposure will follow you, because exposure follows talent, right? TV follows talent. We were following Zion Williamson, right? I mean, the talent is there, right? Anywhere LeBron goes, there's a million cameras. And it's funny, because I remember covering the Nation's Football Classic years ago, and I was speaking with John Wall, who was there, and it was his first time there. He had so much fun. And I said, John, looking back, would you have ever attended an HBCU? And he said, let me tell you, I loved Kentucky, but he said, I've never experienced anything like that. And anybody that's went to an HBCU, my dad went to Grambling State. I've been to the Bayou Classic. I know what homecoming's like, especially here at Howard. It's a different experience that you get at even where I went to school. And it's something that I think he would have been interested in had he been exposed to it. So I think we want our athletes to go there, but we also can't think that all of a sudden that they're all going to be going to those schools, because when you go onto a visit, you see the LSU facilities that they're getting, all the millions of dollars,
the locker room,
technology.
I think they,
yes,
$20 million locker room or something like
and
that?
And even the where dorm I rooms. Went to Maryland, right. the dorms. Like, yeah. it's nicer than where some people live now that work their whole lives. So it's easy to say that. And even at Grambling, when they went through the whole thing with their facilities challenge with their football team, and that kind of got exposed. And now there's more money in the program. But we have to bring the money back to our HBCUs. And even in Congress right now with the Future Act, there's a lot of talk going on. But I think, of course, if we can get that exposure there, the dollars will follow. But you talked about exposure. You are what you see. We're not seeing these top-tier HBCU games on TV all the time. And if they are, you kind of have to search for them.
I was watching one last night. I think it was...
North Carolina A&T and football, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah. And so you're watching it. But I have to say, Carrie, even watching it, the feel, and this is no knock on the announcers. I've been a sports reporter, so I kind of know the thing. But even sort of that energy level that you would get in a top-tier game wasn't really coming through, as if the game was kind of, here we are, this is HBCUs, but it's really not there. So is it a vicious cycle? You know, Kelsey says, you know, if we can get that one, if LeBron James had gone to Howard University right out of high school, would he start a trend, or do you need more than one?
Well, first of all, I think you might need more than one. But I would also think, to follow up on what Kelsey said, I do believe the exposure would follow the athlete. So I'm a strong believer in that. And Jemele Hill's article was interesting, but she wasn't actually the first person to write it. Jimmy King, a few years back, wrote an article which basically said, what if the Fab Five, who went to Michigan,
right, mm-hmm.
had gone to Howard instead of Michigan? Of course, that caught my attention, but he was right, because instead, the Fab Five built all those buildings, in effect, mm-hmm. on Michigan. Michigan never embraced them after they graduated. Many of them have complained about it.
And not until now that
they hired Juwan Howard.
The coach, right.
That was actually a big turning point. Mm-hmm. But for years, they hadn't embraced the Fab Five because of the so-and-so scandals that followed them, et cetera. But in my opinion, if the Fab Five would have come to Howard, right, yes, the exposure would have followed them. But we also have some responsibilities in that as well. And I tell our coaches, we can do this, but we have to acknowledge the fact, right, that if we're telling a parent, send your kid to us, then we have to take care of that kid and protect his ability to be a professional. That means we have to get him the best weight training and conditioning and nutrition and doctors, et cetera, all of the things that will help him become the NBA and professional star that he wants to be.
Because that's what they're looking for, Kelsey. Exactly. That's what they're looking for. 202-319-7810, 202-309-7810, 319-7810. You know, this is a topic that gets talked about in the barbershops, and, you know, folks see this. And I think what's interesting here, too, Kelsey, is what Carrie is talking about. We have to take care of them. Do you think that in some ways that HBCUs have put such an emphasis, right, on academics, mm-hmm. historically, academics, that is the top tier, and where now African-Americans have played such a prominent role in athletics, that it's easy to fall kind of in a stereotype if you put athletics then too high or on par with academics? Do you believe HBCUs are somewhat hesitant to make athletics such a big part of their recruitment of athletes and students?
That's a great question. I think they are touting their academics, but we also know athletics brings in a lot of money, right? And those campuses use that. And also, I mean, the exposure you get from winning a national championship will also get those academic students mm-hmm. to your school, because then we see you more on TV, we see your commercials more, and then as a student watching, I want to go to that school. I want to be a part of that. And I think something interesting in the news this week that hasn't been getting as much attention, CP3 and his foundation were actually just at North Carolina.
Who was CP3?
Chris Paul III, okay. to the non sports right. fans out there. He was just at North Carolina A&T, the Aggies, and his foundation, he's actually been bringing exposure to more HBCUs. He's been in a press conference in a Morehouse College jacket. I mean, this is not the first time that he's done it. And I think this is kind of the type of things that HBCUs need to latch on to. Not just your alums, but those that said, I might have, would have went there, mm-hmm. who are also trying to help bring the attention and exposure. And yes, the academics are huge. And I think now, too, if you talk to a lot of athletes, they also are going back to school to get their degrees. It happens time and time time again. That's what John Wall is doing right now. While he's injured, he's trying to finish up his degree at Kentucky. So I think you need the athletic part. And also, remember, when you're 18, your parents also want you to get that good education, mm-hmm. right? At the end of the day, they want you to get your degree, most parents. But also, you do want the athletics part because you do need the money. And also, the alumni base, the giving, it's much easier to ask when your sports teams are doing
Without a doubt, right?
If you're HBCU or mm-hmm. a PWI. And I've worked in college athletics and giving at Georgetown University, so I understand that. And Georgetown, of course, relies on their basketball program, mm-hmm. right? So Pat Ewan has a big task at hand. But I don't think it's too much to ask the academics to kind of meet the athletics at all for any school, HBCUs or not.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Carrie, I'm going to get right back to you. Let's go to the phone lines if we can, though, real quick. Akira is calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Akira. And if I'm not pronouncing that right, correct me.
Oh, that's okay. It's Akira.
Okay.
So I was calling. I have a son who's a freshman, and he got accepted to, he got 18-4 right offers for football. And several of them was HBCUs. I really tried to push him because I never had the HBCU experience. So I really tried to push him towards the HBCUs. But something surprisingly that he did, when we went on these unofficial visits, the first thing he asked was, well, what is the team GPA? And one of the HBCUs said it was like 2.3. And my son looked at me and he said, no, this is not for me. And I was really surprised as an 18-year-old, he would be that mature to determine that team GPA was very important for him, because to him, it made it seem as if, well, maybe I'm not going to get the type of support that I would get at a PWI. You have these other PWIs, hey, team GPA, you know, 2.8, 3.2. We had some very high GPAs. And that's actually when he decided to commit. He decided to commit to a school with a higher team GPA. Mm-hmm. Something else that was interesting, I felt, was when we went on an unofficial visit to the PWI, they gave us the whole gamut tour. We got to see the weight room. We got to see, you know, where they work out. When we went to the HBCUs, they never showed us the weight room. So, again, here you have this 18-year-old was like, well, are they trying to hide something? Do mm-hmm. they have crappy weight rooms? Like, why are they not showing me everything when you compare it to how they presented for the PW? I mean, we're talking West Point, you know, Mizzou. We had some really big-name schools, and I really tried to push them to the HBCUs. But because of those two factors, he was just like, yeah, I'm not interested, Mom.
Well, thank you.
I said, okay.
Thank you so much, Akira. She had a lot of things, and she kind of led into a little bit of what you talked about, you know, the weight room, the facilities, showing those things. So,
First of all, I can assume she didn't bring her kid to Howard because our football team's GPA is not 2.3.
All right.
But I would say this. When I took the job at Howard, one of the things I said to the president is, across all sports, we have to be who we say we are. Howard has one of the best, has probably the best academic reputation amongst HBCUs. Certainly is in the top two or three.
Is that a problem, though, Carrie, among HBCUs outside of Howard and maybe some others you might consider? Is that a perception?
That the perception, the perception, yeah, is that, you know, oftentimes our coaches will say to me, I can't compete with such and such school because I can't get the type of athletes I want into the school. Mm-hmm. So the opposite issue of what this young woman was talking about, and that's a fair problem for Howard, right? But that's a problem I'm willing to accept because I do believe there's a number of students like this young lady's son mm-hmm. who would be willing to attend a school like Howard, right, who stresses academics. We are a student athlete first, meaning we're students first, athletes second. And we utilize that. And that's been successful at schools like Georgetown, Duke, Stanford. Those are the schools that we want mm-hmm. to in some ways replicate if we can. But I would say this much. I wanted to go back to one of the other points that you had made. The idea that athletics can propel academics is one of the things we're really preaching. Schools like Georgetown, like VCU, right, have been able to you know, they get to a Final Four, they win a championship, that brings additional revenue into the school based on that.
And that's reality. You cannot pay for that kind of advertisement when you're in that one shiny moment for a few highlights if you make it to the Final Four. We can just talk about a small school like George Mason and their run to the Final Four. Right. But we're going to get more into that. Interesting conversation, folks. The phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Karen and Walt, stay right there on the line. We'll get to you. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we are talking about HBCU student athletes and how can more of African-American student athletes be brought into the fold at HBCUs. We know the majority of the top-tier athletes are going to predominantly white institutions. Why is that? TV? Especially if you're looking to go professional, especially if you're talking about football and basketball. And we won't just talk about those two major sports, but they are the ones that bring in the money. Here to help further the conversation is Kerry Davis. He is the director of athletics with Howard University, and Kelsey Nicole Nelson, a reporter with Fox Sports. We'd like to hear from you, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Walt calling from Columbia, Maryland. Go right ahead, Walt, with your question or comment.
I have a comment.
Yes.
Pure and simple, the elephant in the room is money.
Mm-hmm.
Money and exposure. And also, to a large extent, the unrealistic dream that so many of our young black males think they're going pro.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a given. And these major programs will use you up, spit you out, and got fresh bodies just like at a slave auction year after year. And I think what has to happen, I really admired that caller earlier who took her kid to a HBCU, and he found some shortcomings with regard to their GPA, team average. But at the same time, I think it has to start in the home with a parent like that who did indeed take her kid to an HBCU. That black consciousness is not there. And that article by King hit it right on the nose with regard to the Fab Five. Four of those guys went on to play pro ball. And had they gone to A&T or Morgan or Howard, there's no telling what they could have done. But it's got to start somewhere, and it's got to start in the home with that black consciousness, and I just don't see that in a lot of our young people today.
All right, well, thank you so much for your call, Walt. Kelsey, here's some of the information that Jemele Hill sort of spelled out in her article. I'm going to read a little bit of it. The NCAA reported $1.1 billion in revenue for its 2017 fiscal year. Most of that comes from Division I men's basketball tournament. 2016, the NCAA extended its television agreement with CBS and Turner Broadcasting through 2032, an $8.8 billion deal. About 30 Division I schools each bring in at least $100 million in athletic revenue. Almost all of these schools are majority white, she writes. In fact, black men make up only 2.4% of the total undergraduate population of the 65 schools in the so-called Power Five athletic conferences, yet black men make up 55% of the football players in those conferences and 56% of basketball players. So Walt brings up this sort of plantation mentality, and I think Jemele Hill sort of spoke on that. What kind of position do you think that puts those athletes who choose to go to predominantly white institutions? Do you think that will put a greater burden on those who choose to go to those schools now that this conversation is bubbling up more and more?
I think we're starting to see athletes talk about it, but you just said all the money behind it, mm-hmm. right? If I'm a young kid listening to this right now and I'm about to pick a school, knowing that my school has that much money to put behind me possibly, and of course we know it doesn't all go to the student athlete, but still it's an exciting thing for you because you know that's going to help hopefully push and propel you to the next level. You brought up the percentages of the amount of black players in basketball and football in college. We also see that in the NFL and NBA, right?
Yes.
Where they're both predominantly black. And a lot of those guys, as well, adult said, they want to go pro. Now, we know, unfortunately, not everyone's going to go pro. It's very hard
to go
pro. I think
it's like
1%. It's very hard, especially in basketball, where you have even a smaller amount of individuals doing it. But, you know, everyone believes that they can, and the college will make you believe when you can, right? And we know if you go to Alabama, you have a higher chance of going pro, right, for football. If you go to a Duke, you probably have a higher chance of going pro in basketball. Kentucky, you know, we have all those one-and-done schools. None of those schools, I said, were HBCUs. And, yes, I think we have the Celebration Bowl and things like that that give you more exposure, but still, I mean, my mind's going back to the Maryland-Howard game earlier this year. And, yes, of course, everyone said Maryland was going to win, but that was just, it was an unfortunate display because maybe a student watching that game said, well, maybe I thought about going to Howard, but, man, they just got spanked.
But
right?
Doesn't that...
And it's not fair, right? Because it's two different caliber teams.
And I don't want to lose that thought. The only reason I'm cutting you is because you hit on something and I want to sort of slide
over to
Kenny. We know, too, that if you play a top Division I school, you share the gate, and more money will come into those smaller schools, so you have to kind of give that up a little bit to take sometimes a pounding. Sometimes there are upsets, but you got to risk that to sort of help build up your treasure and your athletes. So it puts you in a tough spot, right?
No, it does. And I think you brought up an excellent point. I was sitting there at that game that day thinking, okay, how is this going to affect football and basketball recruiting? I did. That was the one thing that came to my mind. Just as they positively affected our basketball and football recruiting when we went out and beat UNLV under, so we were 43-point underdogs, and we went and beat them on their home field. So it could work, obviously, it could work both ways. And you can't anticipate these things when you're making these deals 2 and 3 years in advance. But I wanted to mark on one thing as well. You talked about Zion Williamson. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think young people should think about is, how do I get my Q factor up, right? Because a guy like Zion Williamson went to Duke with a huge Q factor, right? Because he was...
folks what that is who don't know what Q factor means.
A Q factor is your quotient of people knowing who you are, knowing your name, if you will. And so he went there with a huge Q factor because of his internet. He was an internet sensation. He was somebody who was doing all these crazy dunks on the internet. And that, you know, so when he went to Duke, he already had a strong fan base. However, the normal 17-year-old that is a one-and-done student who goes to one of these schools, let's say you go to Oregon or Arizona, we don't see them very much on television, right? If you're on the East Coast, you don't see that kid on television. He ends up being the fifth pick in the draft or the sixth pick in the draft. He comes into the NBA with zero Q factor. And if they get knocked out early in the tournament, we have no idea what that kid is and what that kid looks like. Now, fast forward. Imagine a top 10 basketball player or two going to an HBCU. That will be front page news on SportsCenter, on social media. It would be everywhere. That athlete's Q factor was going to be through the roof before he ever stepped foot in college. His ability to get a sneaker deal afterwards would be through the roof because he'd be a trailblazer. Right. So my point to these young people, take that opportunity. Be a trailblazer. Don't just be like everyone else and go and be a one-and-done kid at a school where you have minimal exposure.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about HBCUs, student-athletes, predominantly white institutions, and how they all mesh, and how can HBCUs attract more of those top-tier athletes to bring more of a spotlight on the university, to bring in more money to the universities, to upgrade their athletic program. So all of that is in the mix tonight. Let's go back to the phone lines. Karen has been waiting patiently, calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Karen, with your question or comment.
Just a comment. I was just adding on what the other guy has said. My husband and I both encourage both of our kids to go to HBCUs. My son actually got accepted to Morgan, but went to Frostburg because they had a better package and they said that he was going to play. And Frostburg has about 30% African Americans. And then my daughter went to Liberty and played lacrosse there. Lacrosse is a sport that is not predominantly black, but it is a sport that they're looking for young women of color. And we actually played Howard, and I was glad Howard had a team. There's there was a bit of a large discrepancy, but I feel like if Howard would put more money into their athletic program, then they would see a turnaround, because Liberty puts a lot of money into their athletic program, and that's how they get some good people to play for them. But I just wanted to say that we did try, but it just was, the packages were better at the other schools, so...
Oh, thank you.
As far as facilities as well.
Well, thank you so much, Tiffany, for your call. Karen, I'm sorry. Let's go to Tiffany now, calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Tiffany, with your question or comment.
Okay. My name is Tiffany. I'm a former athletic director, and I'm HBCU basketball player, University of Maryland Eastern Shore. Mm-hmm. And I was calling because my issue, I try to push all my athletes to go to HBCUs because it was a wonderful experience. However, I think it's beyond the college start. I think it starts with the middle school and high schools, where the top-tier athletes are pushed to go to top-tier private schools. So when you go to the high school level, and then, you know, you're getting recruited by top tiers, and public schools don't have that opportunity. So my son is one of the middle schoolers that a lot of top-tier private schools want, but we're going to say no, because you're going to go to your high school, your public high school, and hopefully you're going to be great there and allow everybody else to be great, and hopefully that exposure will come at that time.
Well, thank you so much, Tiffany, for your question, your comment. I appreciate that.
Can I comment
yes.
on something she
mm-hmm.
said?
Go right ahead.
Because she actually made a great point, and to finish her point on in basketball, the AAU programs are a significant factor in what we're talking about, because coaches in these AAU programs, they make their money mm-hmm. by what types of schools they're sending
right.
their kids to.
Mm-hmm.
So even with us,
and we're talking specifically basketball more so, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. specifically basketball. Even with us, for example, we did get a very high level basketball player 2 years ago when we signed a young man named RJ Cole. Right. We did that fighting tooth and nail with his AAU program, who wanted him to go to one of the higher profile Nike schools. Right. And sure enough, he came to Howard. Right. And he excelled. He was a rookie of the year as a freshman. He was a player of the year as a sophomore. Right. But then he actually ended up transferring as a junior. Right. Because he ended up, you know, being courted by all of the Power Five schools, who said, boy, he's even better than we thought he was.
Right.
Right? So he ends up at UConn. Right? But I remember during that recruiting process, the AAU program was fighting tooth and nail to send him to a different school because they benefit
right.
from them going to, you know, UConn,
and just adding
et
off of that, you can think about Markel Fultz from this area, mm-hmm. Kevin Durant, Victor Oladipo. Look at the schools that they went to in their AAU programs. I bet you they were not pushing, unfortunately, them going to HBCUs. They wanted them to go to what they considered top caliber so they could sell the next parent on, look what program I got him to, and look where he is now. So I think she's right. I think it does start earlier. And I will say one thing I am seeing more in schools is HBCU flags out with the other flags. So I think we have to start putting in the minds early of these kids that HBCUs have. And I do think it has to start before they're about to go to that first official visit, because mm-hmm. by then their minds are made up. But I think social media, which is why it's really cool now, is playing a significant factor in this. I just talked to some kids on Georgetown sidelines the other day when I was doing sideline reporting, and they were like, man, Georgetown's band isn't like the last band, and they had went to an HBCU school. They were comparing the bands. That mm-hmm. might be a factor. So I think it does have to start earlier, and it's on all of us to get all of our kids back in HBCUs.
And because we do know the school visits are important. I mean, my daughter's in the 11th grade, and we were just going down to Virginia Beach, so we just sort of went through North Carolina, and we stopped at Duke, and we stopped at UNC, and you know, one of the first things they talk about is the cafeteria, right? What food that they have there, all of the nice restaurants that they actually have on campus that they didn't have when I was at Maryland. They had Roy Rogers, but that's no knock on Roy Rogers. They just didn't have what they have now. So that's all a part of it.
Well, Howard does have U Street.
Yes, they do.
That's true.
And so all of that too, Kelsey, I think mm-hmm. is also has to be part of the recruitment.
It is.
What's around.
Yes.
Absolutely it is.
Right?
It
absolutely
is.
Like at Maryland, I mean, College Park, you're surrounded by so much. You can easily get to D.C. And yes, those players are coming into D.C. to party and everything
but
else.
But can you use that?
Great.
They're coming to Howard.
Yes, that's where Howard can pull
Howard
and be actually in D.C.
Can Bowie State use that, or are they kind of where they're
yeah,
located
Bowie's
geographically?
It's a harder area, right? Because you pretty much have to have a car. I know the MARC train stops there. But I think Bowie has other assets that they can also rely on. Because also, not every student wants that maybe big city type of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot sometimes when players go to the NBA. It's kind of it's different. Or even when you take a high school kid to college, I mean, it might be drastically different, right, from where they grew up. But mm-hmm. I think Howard is in a very unique position with their history, with their alumni base, and with where they are.
And
the academics. Yeah. I mean, it all falls in package place. It just matters who's selling it. It's kind of like a used car salesman, right?
Right.
You might have never even thought you were going to buy a used car, but if the person selling it to you comes right, you might be leaving with that used car. And I think that's why you have to have the right people in place. And I think that's when it goes to people like the athletic director to make sure that the right people are in place to get these students to these schools. I don't think people wake up saying, I don't want to go to an HBCU. It's put in their head, right? Hmm. That they shouldn't go to HBCU.
And I want to add one other thing, because you, again, made an excellent point. As much as it's important to recruit the best athletes to HBCUs, it's also important to recruit the best coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and for example, in our case, we for our basketball team last year, we brought in Kenny Blakeney, who was from DeMatha, from D.C., was an All-American at DeMatha, went to Duke, won two national championships at Duke, right? And he wanted the Howard job. He had Coach K call me. He had Mike Bray from Notre Dame call me. He had Grant Hill call me from the Final Four. I mean, and that was huge to me because I wanted someone who wanted the job.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells me that he looked at Howard and said, I can win there, right? And that's, and it starts with that. And in addition with, and I can't say who the recruits are, the level of recruits we're now getting are commensurate with that kind of passion. So we're getting 4- and 5-star recruits now coming on campus for a visit. That's a start. That's a huge start.
Coaches are important, and I would assume alumni are important. And we'll get to that when we come back on the break. We're talking about HBCUs, student athletes, predominantly white major institutions, and how all of this works together. The money, the billions of dollars that we've already stated that are involved with these student athletes, and how some of that money can sort of come back around to HBCUs, because we know historically they had probably the best athletes, some could argue, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We'll be back right after this quick timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we're talking about African-American student athletes and how more of them might be attractive, or how to attract more of them to historically black colleges and universities, and what that would mean for those universities. In studio with us tonight is Kerry Davis, Director of Athletics with Howard University, and Kelsey Nicole Nelson, a reporter with Fox Sports. Kerry Davis, Chris Paul, and what he is doing. You wanted to sort of piggyback on that and his efforts. He's with the Oklahoma.
He's Oklahoma City Thunder now, yes. Kelsey had made a great point earlier about even if the premier athletes don't necessarily attend HBCUs, the mere fact that they are usually standing on the shoulders of someone who has, right, there is that thought about giving back to them. So CP3 was a great example. And I wanted to talk about an example out of another sport. Just recently, Steph Curry gave one of the largest donations and the largest gifts in the history of the university for Howard to start a golf team. And what that did for us, well, first of all, it got us a tremendous amount of exposure. But the connections it made for us, so for example, that day and when we made the announcement, we played golf with the CEO of Callaway, right? And one of the things he said is, I had no idea about Howard's story. Mm. He had no idea how many doctors Howard produced.
And again, Callaway, major golf.
Major golf. He said, I had no idea, you know, what Howard was or who he was. And we heard about how strong our academics were, how most of our students were Pell eligible, et cetera. He was moved by our story, right? But we can't always get a chance to get in front of those people to tell our story. So that connection with Steph Curry changed everything. And then the next day, we got a call from Kevin Plank wanting to have lunch with us, because again, he was moved by the story of Howard, right? So even gifts like that have tangential benefits that go far beyond just the money, right? And I used to say, a rising tide lifts all boats, right? So yes, we're using that money to start a golf program, but every sport at our university is benefiting from the fact that we had that gift from Steph.
And again, Kevin Plank, Under Armour.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. I remember seeing President Frederick on MSNBC with Chris Matthews, I think, talking right. about the right. Steph Curry issue. So it went outside of just a sports story and more about what athletes can bring forth. Kelsey, the young lady who played Little League Baseball
yes.
and was a star,
yes.
Monet Davis.
Yes.
Another story, another connection
right.
to HBCUs.
Yeah, so Monet, obviously, she was so great, and she was great at basketball and softball. She was what we call a dual athlete. She could have went pretty much anywhere, and so we were following her from a young age, but she chose Hampton University, and kind of the same way Howard got that attention, so did Hampton, and the fact that they were able to get such a talented athlete. And now people are following Hampton softball program. And another sport that many people don't follow as much, but now you talk about how it's going to help everybody else. They did a whole video feature special on her first day of school, of classes. How many freshmen get that, right? But Monet had it, and everybody that was interacting with her, well, guess what? You were in that video, and now we're all watching it. So now Hampton is also on the map, and now those kids out there watching might be like, I want to be like Monet. I want to go to Hampton University. So it's huge.
And
it's
we
huge.
Know just historically kind of how things shifted out, right? You know, push for desegregation. What that happens means there's more opportunity for African Americans, more choices. I mean, we know at one point the historically black universities had the creme de la creme of black athletes. I mean, we can talk about those who are in the Hall of Fame. Earl Monroe, I think, Winston-Salem State.
Pearl, yep.
Basketball, Willis
McNair.
Reed, Grambling State, Steve McNair, Alcorn
Doug
State,
Williams.
Doug Williams, Grambling yeah. State, yep. or Grambling then when he was there.
Shannon Sharp, Savannah.
Yeah. Walter Payton.
Rick Mahorn.
Yeah. Harry Carson.
I mean, we could go on and on.
Exactly.
Jerry Rice, Mississippi Valley State, yeah. and found by Bill Watts. So you can find them. And so we, not only great athletes, we're talking about, these are Hall of Fame athletes, almost, I think, every one of them we've named. So, Kerry Davis, getting those athletes out front, not only talking about the school that they went to, but what HBCUs can do, because we knew then the ones that we were talking about, you know, this was really before television came in and
exactly.
put big money yeah. out there. So the historically black universities could have them. But now that we see what money has done in terms of television, how important can those former HBCU athletes, what kind of role can they play? Because Steph Curry went to Davidson.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Can I chime in really quick?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I just talked with Earl Monroe this past weekend. We did a zero prostate cancer race together at Towson University in Baltimore. And mm-hmm. I asked him that very question.
And let's not forget, he started in Baltimore with
yes.
the Bullets. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bringing back memories and good
yeah,
history.
But yeah. he won his championship with the Knicks.
All right. he's a New Yorker.
He came out, Maryland.
Obviously
came out. But it was great because he was saying his HBCU foundation is why his career was what it was. And he said this on my radio show. And I was glad because I think people forget where Earl Monroe, the Pearl, Black
right.
Magic, whatever you want to call
Black
him.
Jesus.
where he came from.
I mean, he's the
and
first.
And it was those
you know?
Roots. Right. And mm-hmm. I think, but everybody we said, like you said, if you look up to those athletes, and those are some of the best of the best. So mm-hmm. if I want to be a top tier athlete, Shannon Sharp now, he's also been able to go from a great athlete to now being a great commentator.
That's
and
right.
now a lot of us watch him
right.
every day,
mm-hmm.
right? And a lot of them did. And I think we have to expose that more. We have to get them talking about it more. And I always give the example of, and even though it wasn't HBCU, but what Allen Iverson did for Georgetown. Mm-hmm. And you guys remember when everybody started rocking the bomber jackets mm-hmm. with Georgetown. And he kind of helped change the culture of a Georgetown that we didn't know before, and he kind of helped change the game of basketball, right, because of his just different style. I think we need the exposure there, but we also need all of the alumni and even those that didn't like Steph Curry to bring the exposure there, because it's for us and it's by us, but it benefits all of us together. And I think we have to stop. It's always a PWI versus HBCU thing.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stop that. We got to come together, because at the end of the day, these schools are for all of us, and you're going to be working with HBCU grads no matter what your profession is. And these athletes, when they retire, they're going to need something to fall back on too. And a lot of the black doctors, the black lawyers, if you talk to them, they had some HBCU roots.
But when money is on the table,
it's hard.
Kerry Davis, Is there such a thing as working together, those that major university with an HBCU?
Well, you know what? I don't look at this as just an issue of HBCUs versus PWIs.
Okay.
I think this is one of those things about size matters. Right. So, for example, there are a lot, you know, we're in the same position as a lot of mid-major schools,
mm-hmm.
schools that play in what, you know, one tournament conferences. Right. And what I like to point out to our young people who are recruits, et cetera, is don't look at all the NBA players who just come from HBCUs. Look at the NBA players who are coming from small schools.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA can find you anywhere. Dame Lillard, right? His backcourt mate. What was his backcourt mate's name? That went to Lehigh.
Yes.
Right.
I can't remember his name, but tip of my tongue.
But there are so many. Scottie Pippen, mm-hmm. Dennis Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's so many NBA players. Charles Oakley, who went to small schools and have thrived in the league. Right. That's somewhat my sell. Let's not talk about the fact that we're an HBCU. Let's just talk about our size. The NBA will find you wherever you are. And same thing with college football. They'll find you wherever you are.
In our last closing moments, instead of sort of me just asking a direct question, what were your closing sort of thoughts if folks are following this conversation and sort of they're hearing us talking about African-American student athletes? They've heard our callers. They've heard the parents say, I brought my kid to try to push him to go to HBCU, but I looked at these facilities and they decided to go elsewhere. We know the percentages of athletes that will make it pro, especially when we're talking basketball and football. And so, you know, what are your closing thoughts around this conversation we've been having tonight, Carrie?
Well, my first thing is, and I think a lot of people concentrate on the five-star athlete, you know, whether it's football or basketball. And I tell our coaches, let's concentrate on the three- and four-star athletes, right? We can make a difference in that arena if we get the kids who want to go to college for 4 years and then benefit for the next 40 based on the fact they went to Howard or Hampton or Morehouse, et cetera, right? We have to sell that potential. And so it's not just for me about getting the five-star kids. Yeah, I'd love to get a couple. Don't get me wrong. But I'd also love to get those kids who I think can make a difference for our university.
And Kelsey, in about 20 seconds.
Yeah, no problem. I'd say it's about the strong foundation. And also say, look at your playing time that you're going to get. You could go to that big school, but mm-hmm. you might not be starting. You might start your last year where I go to HBCU or that small school, and I might be starting all 4 years. And guess what? The NBA and the NFL coaches are looking at me, and now I might have a better chance. Hence what happened to Steph Curry at Davidson.
That's exactly. Right. That's and so that exposure matters, too, just being on the court.
Right.
And exactly. Scouts. What kind of scouts do you have on the NBA and the NFL? That plays a big part, too. That's the Daily Drum on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, September 27th. I'd like to thank our guests, Carrie Davis, Director of Athletics at Howard University, and Kelsey Nicole Nelson, a reporter with Fox Sports. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. The Connection is next. Have a great weekend.